Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with the prodigal son who is back with us, Landon Tengwall. You're off for a week. We missed you.
I know, Jim. I missed you guys. I missed everybody. I didn't miss the state college weather. I will tell you that. I was down in the tropics. I was took a little cruise down to the Western Caribbean. It was very beautiful. But I'm happy to be back. Not as happy with, once again, 40 degrees and rainy. Wasn't like that down there. But we are back at State College, and I'm excited to get back after it. And we were just talking about it, Jim. It's about golf season. I have two or three tee times scheduled this week. It looks like it's going to be 55 and sunny in State College. I think we're back, and I think if you're a golfer, you're excited for this spring.
And I am a golfer, and I am excited. And I'm not sure if I'm not. I am so excited about us getting out to play at some point this year. Okay, it is going to be so much fun for you and I to get out there. We'll probably, knowing us, we'll go to lunch first, of course. Then we'll hit the golf course and we'll have a lot of fun there. But Landon, I'll tell you what, you miss a week, you miss a lot. And by the way, we had some of our listeners say, "Where's Landon?" And it's, "Oh yeah, he's probably on spring break," which you were, and make the rest of us jealous. But anyway, you miss a week, you miss a lot in college football. There's always so much news. And perhaps the biggest news item is what's going on with Dartmouth and the talking about unionizing. And it's the Dartmouth basketball team. And before we get into the specifics of that, because there's a lot going on there, there's a lot involved, the fact that it's basketball, the fact that it's Dartmouth, the fact that it's an Ivy League team. But as a player, here's my question to you. What is the goal of the players to want to unionize and become an employee?
Yeah, Jim, I think first off, it's the benefits. And if you watch the couple interviews with the Dartmouth players, one of the first things that they talk about is I believe it was Cade Haskins. He's one of the players on the team. He actually said one of the biggest things is health insurance. He claimed, and I don't know if this is true or false, but he said that there's been him and multiple guys on the Dartmouth basketball team have had to pay somewhat out of pocket for surgeries and things they've had to go through with health insurance, medical wise. So I think that protection first, to be an employee, to have those health benefits is huge, and having that security. And I think that's kind of the big word there is security. I think people want to be locked into these contracts. And we've talked about these big name guys, Caleb Williams and these big football stars. Do they necessarily want to get locked into these contracts where they're locked in for a team for 3 years and they can only make X amount of money? I don't really think it makes too much sense for those guys, but that is a very small group of people. We're talking about NCAA as a whole, smaller basketball teams like Dartmouth, to be able to say, "Hey, I'm now on salary. I have these health benefits. I have this security. I know I'm locked in here for the next 4 years making, you know, however much money it is, but now I'm able to actually make some money." That's really important. And then you come back and you got Dartmouth saying, no, you know, they're appealing the whole thing, saying they came out and said, you know, essentially we're losing amateurism. You know, these guys, they're not going to go to class if they're employees. We're losing the whole concept of college sports. So Dartmouth is coming back and pushing back against the athletes that are trying to unionize. So it's clear there's a division that not everybody wants the same thing. But from my eyes, good for these guys. They're speaking up. They are not really getting much. I don't know exactly how. I haven't followed the Dartmouth basketball program too much. But if their players are saying that they're having to pay for surgeries and stuff out of pocket, I mean, that's pretty serious. That's not taking care of your guys, Jim. And part of the big reason that unionization is so big and so important, even take away sports, is to be able to have those benefits, have people protected, have your family taken care of. So, you know, I say good on the Dartmouth basketball team, but I'm very interested and excited to see where this goes, because we've seen things similar to this in the past. Northwestern back in 2015, the football team tried to come out, and they voted as a team to unionize, and the NCAA NCAA and Northwestern as a whole kind of shut the thing down and said, you know, look, this isn't going to happen. But that was pre-NIL. That was before all of this happened. So definitely different circumstances. And then you look from the standpoint of, this is probably going to court. I mean, we're talking about unionization. These are people fighting to say, hey, I work this job. I come in every day. I bust my butt. I need to be compensated. I need to be protected. And I think when you take that to court, one, we've already seen the record of NCAA in court. It's not very good recently. They get absolutely beat down by the courts. And when you kind of put it in normal terms, it's almost like you're telling guys, hey, you can't make a living. You can't have security. You can't have health insurance. Just go to school. You know, that's good enough for you. And I think the courts are saying, hey, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense that we're limiting these athletes to, they can't have these securities, they can't have health benefits, they can't be employees of the school. It's when you kind of take a step back and look at it, it almost doesn't make sense. And we talked about it too with the NIL, not allowing people to know what they're going to make when they go to a school. When you put that in terms of real business, when you go to a job offer and they say, hey, you got the job, but we're not going to tell you how much you make until your first day on the job. I don't want that job, Jim. I'm not signing up. I'm saying, hey, I'm good. I'll go somewhere else. So it's very interesting, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, you bring up an interesting aspect to this, which is the health benefits. Now, you're talking about the Dartmouth players having issues where, I'm assuming they're talking about injuries that they felt they incurred while playing. Mm. Now, you've been a part of the Penn State Athletic Department, and I know you interact not just with football players, but athletes from other sports. How does that work at Penn State as far as with injuries and healthcare?
At Penn State, they fully take care of you. They will get your health insurance because they have to have a second one. So if you have some type of surgery, they will collect your health insurance, but you're not seeing any type of bill. And if you do, they get it straightened out very quickly. So any Penn State athletics injury that even is occurred outside of the team, let's say you're training and you injure yourself, they're still fully taking care of that, and you're not seeing any of the burden on your wallet at all. But I mean, it's an Ivy League school. You know, the funding is not nearly as big as, say, a Penn State Athletics. So I'm not saying that's what the player said. I'm not saying that's what happened. They might be exaggerating a little bit, maybe not. But if that is the truth, that they had to pay out of pocket for some of their injuries that occurred while training or playing for the Dartmouth basketball team, I mean, that's pretty serious stuff to not take care of your players. So I would, from anybody's standpoint, I would say, hey, I don't blame you at all for wanting that safety, for wanting that opportunity to be taken care of like any other employee that is a part of a union.
Let's talk about the unintended consequences with these things. And the goal, if we give everyone credit on each side as not being selfish, but trying to do the right thing, here's the unfortunate thing, I think, anyway, especially with it, this being Dartmouth, and it would first expand perhaps to the Ivy Leagues because they're private schools. The National Labor Relations Board is part of that. With private industry as opposed to the public schools. But if you're an Ivy League president right now and you're saying, how many sports make money in the Ivy League? My guess is zero.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I've been told the National Labor Relations Board will say profitability is not an issue when you talk employee status. So if you're doing the same kind of work, here's a profitable company and another company that's not profitable, they're still an employee whether the company is making money or not. Here's where I'm headed, Landon. The repercussion that company has that's not profitable is we shut our doors. The owner says, I'm not going to keep operating at a loss. That makes no sense to me. Could that be the end result of this? especially Ivy Leagues, where other sports are often, other schools, their image is so much about their athletics. The Ivy League is not about athletics. It's about academics. I don't think Harvard will have a problem recruiting students to come in if they don't have a football team. Is that the risk we run where people will just say, you know what? We will either cut out the whole athletic department or these specific sports because they don't make money.
Well, I think it's an interesting thought. And this is where it starts to get really messy, I think, with these unionization. And then you have to look at Title IX. You start talking about sports not bringing in money. You start going through a lot and, you know, and taking out sports and saying, hey, we're essentially taking out all the sports that are in the negative, which is for most schools outside of football and basketball is every single sport. So, you know, it's one of those things, but then you have to come back and say, hey, what rules are we violating? What Title IX rules are we violating? And, you know, you look around Penn State and we have a lot more sports programs than say, you know, in Alabama. So, you know, it's very different from school to school. It's not like every school has, you know, 30 sports programs and every school has a volleyball, men's volleyball, women's volleyball. It's, you know, it's not like that at all. So it would be very interesting to see how that will be handled going down the line, just because I think that gets so messy when you start to talk about the unionization. But at the same time, you know, you can argue you're an employee of the university. Are there some employees of the university that, you know, maybe aren't bringing in any money, but they're just keeping that alive just because they need to, you know, almost essentially meet a quota. So I don't know. I guess it's going to be really interesting. And like I said, it's just going to continue to be NIL, the wild, wild west. Everything's going to just be constantly changing. But it's going to be very curious to see how the NCAA handles this. But I think a overall unionization is the best route to go. I think it's the cleanest route. Does it kind of kill the whole student athlete thing? It does. So that will be interesting to see where that goes. Can guys opt out of going to college? And I think any older person with any type of clear point of view of what's good for someone, that you don't want that. We need these kids to continue to get their degrees and put school and college first, because that is what is going to be important down the line. But you know, with where we're going, I could see that whole student athlete thing really going out the window, Jim.
I have a couple more questions for you on this topic, Landon, but we're going to get to that when we come back for quarter number two. So stay tuned. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Landon Tengwall. We were having a nice discussion about what's going on in college sports, specifically what's going on with the Dartmouth basketball team, where they are, they actually did put in the vote to unionize. And then the question is, okay, what does that mean going forward? And in your answer, Landon, you brought up some great points. One of them being, what about Title IX, which says they must give women the same opportunity as men in collegiate sports. Now, and I believe opportunity is the word they use. So do they have to be paid the same as the men? But I'll go even further. I think, Landon, the split is we see football and we see those huge contracts for football. By the way, those huge television contracts for football do not include the Ivy League. okay, and Dartmouth. But it's even football and the rest of men's sports are very different. Maybe include men's basketball. But other than that, I don't think there's any sport, other sports that are profitable overall. You might get the isolated case, but so how do schools handle that? When do you have a completely separate union for football versus the other sports? How does this work?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that the NCAA went with the NIL route to begin with was because it was easy and, you know, fair to an extent. They knew that Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison were going to make millions of dollars, and that, you know, the, you know, Penn State, you know, women's field hockey program was not. That was known, but it was still fair. It was saying, hey, you market yourself how you want and you get whatever you can get yourself. So I think that's why it was such an easy, so to say, fix for the NCAA. We've seen how messy that has become now. But I do think there's going to have to be specialization of the unionization within college programs, because you can't, like you said, you can't group a women's sport in with men's football. It is just completely, it's a different realm, and it's just not at all the same thing. And one is becoming much more professionalized than the other. And, you know, obviously we've seen that over the past couple of years. So it is one of the things, it's going to be really difficult. And I think there's going to have to be a lot of new laws passed. I think there's going to have to be a lot of, the NCAA saying, okay, we're going to kind of peel this law back. We're going to reappeal this. There's going to have to be a whole overhaul of the whole rule book, essentially. And I think it's time for that. I think we're in a new day and age, NIL, transfer portal, everything going on. It's time for the NCAA to grab the reins and kind of rewrite the rule book a little bit and work with the players, though. It's gotten to the point where, you know, it was the players were fed up. They said, we're not getting anything. And now some players, it's kind of uneven. Some players are just getting massive amounts. And then there's still these people that are, you know, a lot of sports that aren't getting anything. And they're saying, well, you know, this is cool that you allowed us to do NIL, but how much NIL is the Dartmouth men's basketball program really getting? Now, in the school funding, do they have enough to employ, you know, 20 guys on the basketball team? Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about a university that is legit, that has a ton of funding coming in. So I think they're able to pay those salaries, but are they able to get the donors and the Dartmouth, you know, basketball donors enough money to pay the essentially what these guys would be making from being a university, work for the university and be funded by the university? I don't think that they have that funding. So to go the route of unionization just benefits those everybody else so much more. Like I said, put the Drew Allar, put the Nick Singletons to the side. They're going to make their money. They're going to make those big chunks of money. But this is about the everyday NCAA athlete that deserves to make some money and be compensated for the work that they're putting in, Jim.
And here's the thing, and I'm not sure when this happened. It's pretty obvious with football, it's almost a full-time job, or is a full-time job. But collegiate athletics was always historically, it was actually a benefit to the athlete. Hey, look, we're offering you this opportunity to play sports at a collegiate level. It wasn't about the money that's coming in for football. You did it because you love the sport. So if you're playing women's softball, if you're playing men's lacrosse, it was never being done so that I can become a professional lacrosse player or a professional women's softball player. So at what point, what I'm fearful of, Landon, is you have football, which has become at least semi-professional, because there's just, you know, there's billions of dollars going into it because of television. And that's not the case for the other sports. Is it difficult to treat all the sports the same? If we're going to go unionize football, we've got to unionize lacrosse.
Yeah, look, I mean, I do think you have to have some normalcy for all sports. But, you know, you look back, going back to Reggie Bush getting paid, Johnny Manziel talking about, he just did a recent documentary. He talked about, hey, I'm seeing all these jerseys in the, you know, in the student store, all online, selling hundreds of thousands of my jersey, and I'm not seeing a dime. It, you don't see that type of impact in field hockey and volleyball. So that's why, like I said, there's going to have to be a rewriting of the rule book. And as you know, Title IX has been around for a while, but I think that's going to have to be tweaked too. It's, you're going to have to understand that this is going the professional route. And that is because of social media. That is because of just the TV deals. It's the route that the NCAA took themselves down, in my opinion. They knew that one day this was going to come about. They couldn't continue to make that much money and capitalize on everything to do with college football, college basketball, and not have people start to say, okay, hold on, wait a minute. Everybody needs to get a little chunk of this. You're not just going to keep getting essentially 100% of the profit, and these guys that you're actually making the profit off of really seeing nothing. And it is all about how you spin it. Like you said, when everybody first started back in, you know, 50s, 60s, way earlier on, it was, hey, I get a full scholarship. I get to go play football, basketball, whatever, lacrosse at Penn State, and I get a full ride, and, you know, I get to go to school and get my degree for free. That's awesome. But you start to get a day and age where everything's at your fingertips. You see everything everybody's doing, and you start to see players, you know, even before NIL, guys are, everybody knew that teams in the SEC are paying their guys. You see guys with Lambos and these track hawks, and it's like, hey, when am I going to start to get a little bit of that? We need to make this a little more fair. And like I talked, you know, Johnny Manziel talked about all the money that he had made. And so it was known that certain people were getting paid, obviously illegally, but it got to a point where it's like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. It's clear that we're bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars. It's time to spread this out a little bit. And like I said, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for the NCAA to continue to navigate through this and figure out the best solution. But I just think overall, we are headed to the unionization route. I don't think there's any easier solution. I think continuing on where we are in NIL is just going to create even more lopsidedness of the top players just making more and more money, and everybody else, the other 99%, really making nothing, bringing in very little. And like I said, it's at Penn State, I've talked about, everybody gets a little something. They make sure that every single player sees a little bit of NIL money. But it's not like that in other places. I've spoken about having friends at other big schools too, that if you're not a starter or if you're not in the rotation, you're not seeing a dime of NIL money. And I think that's what we need to get away from, making sure that everybody gets a little cut. Because I've spoken to this too in the past, that guys are trying to send money home to their family. That stuff, that is a real that's a reality for guys, that they need to have some funds to help take care of their family. There's people with kids, and these organizations, these universities, they have the ability, they have the funding to employ these students. I don't really think that's the problem. I think the problem is them not wanting to employ these students and give out, you know, another 1,000, more than 1,000 at Penn State employees, to give out those health benefits to everybody. And then there's the messy side of, then you have to, if you're an employee, then you have to pay taxes on your scholarship. If you're given that scholarship and you're an employee of a university, you have to pay taxes on that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think a big part of this is going to be the taxation of, I guess, student athletes still, you could say. Like I said, I think there is so much, you know, little minute details that are kind of just saying, hey, we can't do that. Okay, we can't go this route because of this. That's why I'm saying I think there needs to be a whole rewrite of the rule book to kind of allow each sport to go in their own direction. Because like I said, volleyball and football in NCAA are not going in the same direction. You know, it's just not. And everybody can recognize that. And I think we have to appreciate each sport for what it is. And we have to understand that football, college football, is one of the biggest, probably going to be bigger than the NFL, and people just enjoy it more, frankly. I think you talk to people and they love college football. And so I think we're just headed for that to just keep climbing as far as popularity, as far as money being poured into it from TV deals, media right deals, and then more and more just NIL money just being pumped into the sport. So I think they have to figure out a way to take this in a different direction, make, you know, make it a unionization, but make it fair for everybody, make, allow people, everybody to get something out of it. And I don't know, like we just said, when we finished the last segment, there really is no right answer, but I think the easiest answer is to go the unionization route, but how the NCAA navigates that exactly is going to be really difficult. And I think it's going to take a lot of time, Jim. I don't think we're going to see a full unionization for at least another, you know, 3 to 5 years, just because I think there's so many little details to get ironed out. But I do think that is the future of not only college football, but NCAA sports in general.
Well, a couple quick thoughts. I'm not sure the NCAA is the right one to put the get the answer, and they don't have everything they do. They then lose in court. I hate the answer. Then the counter answer is the federal government stepping in, which is usually not the right answer to these things. But I think eventually the point you made about, you know, men's football is different than a lot of the other sports. Money is coming in, the compensation there. But I would really hate to have the end result of this be the dropping of the student part or of the student athlete, because for the vast majority of what we currently call student athletes, they are not going to be professional at that chosen sport. That education is the value of them being a student athlete. The student part, not the athlete part. All right, Landon, I promise, next segment, we're going to talk some football. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Landon Tengwall. I'm Jim Galante. And as promised, Landon, we are going to actually talk about football this segment. Spring ball is coming up, and what I've really enjoyed in our conversations as we go, is being able to get kind of that insider take on things. We all know what it's like to feel like being a fan and, oh, we're going to see some football or hear some football talk. What I'm wondering about with spring football coming up is, what is it like for the players? And I'm going to ask it two different ways. What's it like for, you know, those freshmen, those guys who should be high school seniors right now? They left early and they've got spring football coming up. And then how is it for that guy who this is now their third or fourth year of spring practice? What's everybody's reaction to it?
Yeah, the freshmen are always really excited to start out, finally put those pads on for the first time in college football. And then they realize how difficult it is, and they get a little bit of that setback. They go through those freshman blues.
Well, how long does it take for that reality to set in, where you go from excited to uh-oh?
It's normally about practice. It's practice three when you put the pads on, Jim, because those first two practices, they're non-padded, and you see all these bright-eyed guys. And I remember, I won't say who, but it was a lineman that was a freshman last year, and I looked him after the first day, and I said, "How was it?" And he said, "Man, I'm having so much fun." And I said, "Okay." I said, "I'll come back to you spring practice 13 and I'll ask you the same question." And I remember going back to him. I saw him in the locker room. I said, "You know, how are you enjoying it?" He said, "Oh, man, this is different than high school football." So it is, it's definitely, it's not something you realize how difficult it is until you're in it. And then you speak of, so the freshmen are excited, but they're going to go through. It's really nice to have that transition period, have that time to get in the playbook. And look, and the coaches know, look, you're still supposed to be in high school, and certain guys have bigger expectations on them than others, but they do understand that you're going to be a little bit behind. You just got here. You're still learning the playbook. So there is that emphasis on really getting those freshmen involved, getting them a lot of reps, taking some reps off of those older guys. You spoke about guys that have been in their third, fourth spring ball. I'm thinking about a guy, Sal Wormley, who's about to go into his sixth spring ball. His knees are probably hurting, the back, all of it. I can't imagine it feels too good, especially after a six-month season. So I think that's why the emphasis a little bit more is towards the freshmen, getting those freshmen, those sophomore maybe, that are really going to start to make a big impact this year, getting those guys a lot of reps. You see the reps cut down a little bit for the ones and even some of the twos, and you'll see a lot more of the depth getting a lot of those reps. But real quick, and I know we are kind of off the unionization topic, but if we do go that route where we're unionizing, we're looking at it something similar to the NFLPA, a college player association. And that's when you start to get demands. You start to say, hey, I want X, Y, Z. And I think one of the demands that be at the top is getting rid of spring ball or completely overhauling it, where it is not putting this strain on these guys' bodies a month and a half, 2 months after the season. You know, I'm looking around. There are some places that started spring ball before spring break. I think most places have spring break either last week or this week. A lot of schools will do a week or two of spring ball, late February, early March, give the guys a week off for spring break, and then come back and finish up another 2 or 3 weeks of spring ball. And think about that. Late February, Jim, I mean, if that's how Georgia does it, I don't know how every school does it, but I've seen some schools. If you're Georgia, those guys, and you're playing – you know, early January, and especially with where we're headed now, where the college football championship won't be till almost late January, you're starting spring ball, what, a month later after a six month grind season on your body? It just doesn't make sense. And just from talking to people around, not only Penn State, but other schools, no player enjoys spring ball, Jim. Everybody loves honing in their craft, but nobody's excited about getting their body beat down for 6 months and then coming back a month and a half later and not even really having any time to let those little things heal, let those little, you know, ankle twist, you know, your shoulder's still a little messed up. That's why NFL players wouldn't even dream of having some type of, contact spring. I think we're going to move into that rookie mini camp, where everybody kind of in the NFL, they get those 2 or 3 months off. They come in, they have, you know, a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks where they're just putting jerseys on. They're out there going through individual drills with their prospective coaches, you know, just kind of fine tuning and getting away from those full on, 13, 14 full padded practices where you're essentially coming in and you're beating down the body again for another 5 weeks directly after a 6 month season. So I do think that's something that will continue to be brought up, and something that's not really thought about because the fans, rightfully so, enjoy spring ball so much. There's no football going on. The spring is very much a lull for a lot of sports. I mean, obviously basketball starts to heat up, but everybody's missing football. When you start to get into March, April, all the football enthusiasts are saying, man, I'm itching for any type of news. And that's where all the rumors go crazy and everybody's enjoying that type of stuff. So for college football fans to get articles to read about, hey, how's this young guy doing in spring ball, going to the spring game, getting to see a little bit of that action live, is really exciting. But you got to understand from a player's perspective, it is really rough, that spring ball. So I think we're going to look to that to start to be more of a fine tuning, getting maybe some freshman practices, maybe just the freshmen do a little bit of contact, put some pads on, younger guys, maybe freshmen and sophomore. But I think we're going to see spring ball start to take a big step back as college football starts to morph into more of a professionalism, you know, no longer amateur. And guys are going to start thinking about their bodies. And a guy like, you know, Abdul Carter, who we know is going to the NFL and is going to make a ton of money. And not to say that these guys are selfish for this at all, but saying, hey, this is clearly not good for my body. I mean, anybody, you talk to any professional, they'll tell you putting on the pads again 2 months after the long grueling season makes absolutely no sense. It's not healthy for you. And I think you're going to see guys start to say, hey, we're making all these business decisions. Why can't I sit out spring ball? I need to think about my health, my well-being. I'm essentially a million-dollar machine who's going to go to the NFL. I don't want to put myself through this. I don't necessarily need this. And that's not to say you're not going to grind on your craft and continue to get better in the spring, but I don't need this extra 15 practices on my body. So I'm very interested to see kind of where that goes.
You brought up some interesting points, and you're right. As a fan, I don't think about those things. But the way you presented it to me there, Landon, my question is this. Forgetting a union to make this happen, I would think just as a coach, I know Abdul Carter's changing position, so there's more to that discussion. Let's use Sal warmly. He's in the trenches. He's been there for years. Does contact in the spring really change anything for him? Or am I just risking him getting beat up and getting beat down more? As a coach, forget having someone telling me I can't have contact. Wouldn't I be smarter maybe in limiting that contact?
Yeah, and I think that's what you're seeing a lot of teams start to go towards. A lot of specialization of position, a lot of taking stress that's, you know, unneeded stress off their athletes. I think as we've, and a lot of old heads and your generation hit, you know, will hit us with the, oh, you guys aren't tough anymore. You know, back in our day, we had 3-a-days. And don't get me wrong. We hear all of that and we acknowledge it. But, you know, science and studies and actually looking at athletes' bodies and things of that nature is really important to understand, hey, maybe it's not the best idea to grind these guys into the ground. And like you said, obviously it's Abdul Carter's a little bit of a, like you said, maybe a spring ball would be good for him, especially, you know, switching positions and stuff. But no, do I think this spring ball is truly going to benefit Sal Warmly a lot more than it's going to say, you know, hurt him a little bit, because he has been through it. He knows the playbook like the back of his hand. I think giving guys those a little more of rest and, you know, easy reps on air, you know, going over plays, working on those, fine tuning those techniques would be so much more valuable than grinding guys into the ground. And look, and there's injuries in spring ball. I mean, I've seen guys tear their ACL, tear their rotator cuff, stuff like that, that now might even put you out for the season. And when you start to look at it like that, hey, I'm risking, and that's kind of what I mean with especially big name guys, I'm risking my season next year, my junior year, where if I have a good year, hey, I'm headed to the league. I'm about to go make $20 million. But, oh, now I tear my ACL in spring ball. Not only am I not going to play next season, I have to come back for a whole nother year. My draft stock goes all the way down. You know, you start to really talk about it, and you're like, this isn't really making much sense, especially for these big-name guys. But really everybody. And that's why, like I said, I could see this start to turn into a spring ball is really just for the younger guys. And like I said, it already is kind of shaped that way where younger guys are getting a lot of reps. But don't get me wrong, those ones and those twos, they're still in the trenches going at each other every day. And during the season too, you go against a D squad, which is essentially, you know, the freshmen on the other, the ones on offense are going against freshmen defensive guys, and they're giving them a look. In spring ball, it's one versus ones. It is Sal Warmly versus Devon Elise every single day in the trenches. It's not easy. I mean, you're going against the top of the top, you know, the cream of the crop each day. It's not some easy practices. So it's definitely a conversation to have. And I think that's something that players and coaches are going to continue to talk about more and more as this goes on.
Well, responding to that as an old guy, Landon, I might surprise you a little bit, because I'm you know, thinking of the other way, like Devon Ellis versus Sal Warmly. Is either one of them benefiting from hitting each other? Now, there's new coordinators, especially new offensive coordinator. I think having the time, learning plays, learn them. The old saying I like, don't learn it till you do it right. Learn it till you can't do it wrong, you know? And those are the things that I think would be important. The contact I don't see as important. And for those folks from my generation who say back in my day, I want to point out something else. Back in my day, there weren't 265-pound defensive ends running a 4.46, okay? The joints have not kept up with the rest of the athletic advancements that are being made. It's kind of like I always use the analogy to baseball. How come pitchers used to pitch 558 innings a year? Well, they weren't throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs and 95 mile an hour sliders like they are today, which destroys the arm. So that's my take on it from being an old guy, Landon. All right, that's it for quarter number three. When we come back, I've got some specific questions about the team for Landon. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And we're back. Landon Pengwall, Jim Galante, fourth quarter of the Keystone Kickoff Show. Landon, we were talking between segments that you and I got to stop just talking about everything else and going off on tangents. And we got to get back to our agenda. And one part of our agenda for today's show was to talk about this team specifically and some specific players on the team going into the spring. And we have been talking about, you know, they should scaling things down in the spring. But the fact is, players are playing for positions right now. Are there spots that you see with this team specifically, positions where we are going to have interesting position battles here in the spring?
Yeah, there's a few that I'm really excited for, Jim. Number one that came to mind for me is tight end. Obviously, Tyler Warren, clear cut number one, and I am very excited to see him be the guy. He's always, you know, it's been him, Theo Johnson, Brenton Strange before that. He kind of always had someone he really had to share with. I think this is going to be the Tyler Warren show this year, and I'm excited to see him, honestly, maybe lead the country in touchdowns. We know what type of red zone target he is. But putting that aside, fantastic tight end there. I'm excited to see what happens at the number two slot. We've seen Penn State loves to use our tight ends two, even three deep at once. But the third guy on the tight end normally doesn't see as much. He'll see that wing T formation that we use. But that number two slot is going to be a big battle between Andrew Rapoyer and Khalil Dinkins. We saw Khalil have a couple big splash moments, couple touchdowns last year where he would slip open, find himself wide open, but also do some really fantastic blocking in that wing T formation that I mentioned when we're on the goal line or fourth down. And then we saw Andrew Rapoyer get some burn towards the end of the year. I love him personally. He's one of those classic, you know, almost Jeremy Shockey, ready to kill someone on the field, and he's going to go up, get that ball for you. But he kind of gives me some Brenton Strange vibes because he loves to block. I think, but there, and those are two names that I would also watch out for as far as breakout players this spring. And I don't think there's any coincidence that the first two guys that come to mind are both Ty Howe guys. We have to give a shout out to Ty Howe, who is just pumping out elite tight ends, you know, great production on the field, guys that are playing in the NFL. And he just, it just seems like he keeps doing it year after year, Jim, bringing in a big recruit, you know, just letting them do their thing. And kind of just really bringing them along. So I'm excited to see how Ty Howe continues to bring this group along. Obviously, a couple other young tight ends coming in the mix too. But I think those two guys right away are gonna be fighting for that number two spot. So I'm excited to see where that goes over there at tight end.
Let me just comment on the tight ends real quick. While you're off in the tropics, you know, having fun, me, I don't have a life. So I actually brought up a tape of one of the football games from last year, the Michigan State game. And if you recall the big play, Nick Singleton, the little screen pass, yep, and he gets like 40, 50 yards. Tyler Warren buried a defender. What I don't know if everyone remembers is they ran the play a couple other times, once with Catron Allen. There was a third time I saw it. Now, they didn't make 50 yards, but Tyler Warren did the same thing. He buried a defender. into the sideline. So I think that needs to be pointed out with him. And at tight end, as you mentioned, it's not just who's there, but they're bringing in more. Ty Howe, Luke Reynolds was very, very highly rated, has come in. I don't know if you've seen anything from him yet or heard any conversations about him, but he appears to just be continuing that tight end thing.
Yeah, obviously the number one tight end in the nation. And honestly, it probably wasn't even fair to not put him in that conversation for that number two slot. Obviously, extremely talented. It's like Ty Howe almost has a comedy of errors of he has too many guys there. It's almost that problem of not enough positions to get guys on the field and too many guys that can play. And as a coach, that is always a great problem to have. But yeah, I'm excited to see how he continues to bring these young guys along. And then a guy like Luke Reynolds, to have someone like Tyler Warren to mentor you, I mean, it's just that is big time. I mean, you look back, this trend has continued. Pat Freiermuth mentoring Brenton Strange, Theo Johnson, Tyler Warren, Strange continuing to mentor, you know, Theo and those guys. It's like a trickle down mentoring of just fantastic tight ends. And it's exciting. Think about before Pat Freiermuth getting mentored by other guys, Jesse James. I mean, it just keeps going down the list. I mean, we just pump out tight ends here at Penn State. And I'm really excited to see where that continues to go with this tight end group. And I think it's going to be a big strength of this Penn State offense. But kind of flipping sides and going to the trenches here a little bit, I'm excited. We talked about Abdul Carter a little bit earlier. I'm excited to see this Abdul Carter transition, Jim. It's a big difference going from a stand-up linebacker, you know, maybe being on the line two or three times a game with that Manny Diaz 7-up look, getting to play around, versus lining up against a left tackle for 60 plays. That's a big difference, and you have to learn a completely different way to play. I mean, you have to set the edges as a defensive end. You have a 330-pound guard, you know, Vango Ayane pulling, and you have to put that shoulder down, and you have to set that edge and make sure nothing gets outside of you. And, you know, I talked about before setting up pass rush moves. It's different. When you only have two or three true pass rushes in a game, you say, okay, I'm going to use these two or three moves. Now you have 30 pass rush reps against a left tackle. How am I going to set this guy up? What moves am I going to give him early? And then, you know, trick him later on, fake that move and give him something else. That's where that pass rush, those elite pass rushers really start to get really intellectual and toy with these guys. So I'm excited to see what Abdul Carter can do from that standpoint, because we've seen Micah Parsons make that transition and just be absolutely phenomenal. I'm not comparing them completely, but they're very similar guys with that burst, with that athleticism, being able to just pack on weight and still run absurd 40s and be extremely quick. So I'm really excited to see that. But also Abdul and Denai Dennis Sutton versus Drew Shelton and Anthony Donka. I think that's going to be fantastic. I think they're all going to get each other so much better. I just got done trashing spring ball the whole time, saying how bad it was. There is that side of it. It does get everybody better. And when you're going against Abdul Carter and Denai Dennis Sutton every day for a young offensive line, that's going to make you that much better when you see Ohio State, later in the season, and you see those elite pass rushers. It's going to have you ready. So in the trenches, I'm excited to see those battles. We obviously know what we have on the inside with a bunch of old heads at the D tackles and at the center and guards. So it's, you know, that's still going to be good. But those young guys on the edge, different positions, new guys stepping into new roles, I think it's going to be really beneficial for these guys in the trenches to get some time with each other gelling, but also competing their butts off against some really talented players.
Who are the under-the-radar guys who we're not talking about enough, Landon?
Yeah, we've talked about him on the podcast, and everybody knows who he is. But I think, I'm saying it right now, Kobe King is going to be in the conversation for the Dick Butkus Award. And I don't think he'll win it because he doesn't make those huge, you know, splash interceptions, nothing like that. He's going to lead your team with 10 to 14 tackles a game. He's going to be plugging those holes. He's going to create some forced fumbles, some TFLs. I think having Kobe King this season at our middle linebacker position is going to be invaluable. He is going to lead that defense, and it's going to be a special group. And I am really excited to see him continue to do his thing and have a great spring ball. But staying on the defensive side, we were just talking about Denai and Abdul. Jameel Lyons is a talent. He is really athletic, really big, and really strong. And those things go pretty well together, Jim, especially at defensive end nowadays. Reminds me of kind of Denai freshman year, where he didn't have all the tools, but you could see how athletic and how strong he was being developed by Deion Barnes, having Denai, who was sitting behind Chop, got to talk to those guys, Adisa, having those guys as mentors your freshman year, and now coming into a role where he's probably the third rusher, third or fourth rusher, which, you know, in a game, the defensive ends, you have to switch out a lot. I mean, that's a position where you are constantly running. He's going to see a lot of reps, and I think Jameel Lyons is going to be a breakout star for this Penn State defense, and I think you're going to see some of that in spring ball. I expect his name to start to get whispered very early on in the media and then the spring game. I have a big expectations for him this coming year. So that is my candidate of someone who's kind of been playing for a while, Kobe King, who is going to continue to be unbelievable, who I think is vastly underrated, and then Jameel Lyons coming in and starting to make a big impact and keeping that depth at the defensive line position, which we have seen Penn State have for many of years, just continue to pump out guys. So two guys that I'm really excited for.
I'm glad you brought up Kobe King, because I thought there was such a marked improvement from the 22 season to 23. He was so solid in 23. The trajectory is going the right way with him. All right, this might be a little bit of an unfair question because I don't know how much you would know about them, but how about any of the first-year guys? Not necessarily that, oh, they're going to come right in and play, but who should fans be excited about? I know there was, 16 incoming class of 24 players who were already on campus. Anyone strike you that the fans should get to know?
Yeah, and I'm a little biased on this one. We talked about Luke Reynolds, and he's the number one tight end in the nation. I think he is going to be impressive. I've talked to him in the facility, been around him, has a great attitude, has a great mindset. So I think that's someone that, without a doubt, is going to be a great player here at Penn State, especially being under, you know, Ty Howe, working with Tyler Warren, getting that mentorship. It's going to be fantastic. That's a little bit of an easier answer. Cooper Cousins, I think, is someone who is already ready to not toot my own horn, but kind of reminds me of myself coming in right away, already ready to go. I mean, he is big, huge, strong, has good technique. Definitely going to see a lot of reps, I think, at the center position. We talked about Nick Dawkins finally stepping into that role in year five and very deserving of it. But I think we see Cooper Cousins start to get some burn early in the year, especially against some of those FCS opponents. And then, you know, who knows what happens? I think there might be a little bit of a competition at that center position, but I could see Cooper Cousins getting some real play time because he is a pro's pro. I've talked about someone like Hunter Norzad, who you could just be around them and you say, hey, this guy is about his business. He is essentially, you know, an NFL vet in a college locker room. Cooper Cousins kind of gives that vibe off of him as a true freshman, as someone who should still be in high school. I've had the pleasure of being around him for the past 4 years of him being a recruit, and I've always been really excited about him once he's going to be here, and he just has given me every reason to continue to be excited about the opportunity that's at hand for him. So look for Cooper Cousins to make a big impact for this Penn State offensive line.
Fantastic, Landon. Some players to get really excited about, and that's the reason why there's spring practice, so I could get all excited about these players. That's it. That's the final word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.